Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
We're in a grey glass bird's nest in London overlooking the fog, and we have some clearing up to do in a detective special today on the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. The detectives at the New York Times, of course, uncovering more stuff that Zuckerberg didn't tell you about. But first, on a lighter note, I've got Dom Preston and I have Scott Carey here to talk about a quite surprisingly good Detective Pikachu trailer. What the hell is it, Dom? And why does it look like it might actually be quite a good film?
So this is a new Nintendo movie that's coming out in spring 2019.
It's quite a long lead on a trailer.
For a first one, it's about 6 months, which is pretty typical for a film like this. For sort of a big one, you might get even longer, like a year with a brief teaser. But I think the first trailer like this, we'll see another one in January, February, probably something like that. And then it'll come out, it comes out in April, May. It's around then.
May, isn't it? Yeah.
So this it's a really interesting choice for Nintendo's first big modern film project. It's not come completely out of nowhere. It's based on a game called Detective Pikachu.
Right.
Which originally...
I didn't know that existed. Yeah, I was unaware of Detective Pikachu.
It's this really weird thing where that was a Japanese-only game. It didn't come out the West for about 2 years.
Oh, but it is out here now.
It is out now, or it's coming out soon.
Is it a 3DS thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a 3DS game that only came out in Japan. It was this niche little prospect. And then clearly someone somewhere realized, oh, wait, this could be a thing.
Yeah.
And so the talking Pikachu is an element in the game as well. And it is this kind of mystery where you and your Detective Pikachu in his little Sherlock Holmes Deerstalker hat go about solving mysteries. And so as soon as there was this talk that they're making a film, it blew people's minds. There was a big fan campaign to get Danny DeVito to do the voice.
Why?
Because in the game, it's quite a gruff kind of Pikachu that they do.
What, like a kind of Raymond Chandler? like whiskey swilling
exactly,
detective.
Yeah. Kind of really lean into the detective side of it.
But they haven't. They've gone for
Ryan Reynolds.
They've gone for a bankable Canadian star.
Yeah. Which says a lot then about the tone the film seems to have based on the first trailer, which is basically Deadpool light.
It's Deadpool for kids, isn't
it? Yeah, it looks very snarky and silly, self-aware, nod, nod, wink, wink. We all know this is what it is. It's also...
But it's nothing to do with Marvel?
No.
Okay.
This is being made by Legendary Entertainment and Warner Brothers, I think.
Okay.
Obviously, it's very difficult. It's a chicken and egg thing for us at this point to work out whether the tone was that way in the script or whether the tone is that way because it's Ryan Reynolds.
I think, well, so one giveaway on the script side is that one of the two credited writers is Nicole Perlman, who broke to fame when she wrote Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one.
Okay.
With James Gunn.
So it's that.
And she's also writing, has written rather Captain Marvel. And so she's on a big run at the moment of big stuff. So I think that kind of slightly Guardians-esque, slightly Deadpool-esque tone, that was clearly something that was there from the get-go. And I think it's really telling. It's really savvy because this is Nintendo... This is obviously going to be kid-friendly. It's a Pokemon movie.
Yeah, this is a kid's film.
It's not, but it's not. The target market is us. This is a millennial film.
Okay.
All that trailer is it screams, we're trying to get these snarky millennials with that weird internet sense of humor. And the telling thing about that is the Pokemon that are front and center are Pikachu, Jigglypuff, and that silly Mime one whose name I can't remember.
Mr. Mime. That was the bit in the trailer.
Is it called Mr. Mime?
Mr. Mime. That's the bit in the trailer that made me laugh the most.
Is Mimic
when he's like, and he was like, yeah, just tell it. He was miming something, obviously, and he's like, he's telling you to shove it. So yeah, this is totally like sense of humor.
Yeah. But so those are all original 150 Pokemon. So that's the stuff that we grew up with, people who had Pokemon Red and Blue on their Game Boy back in the day. And it's so they haven't pushed with the Pokemon that sort of have led the last few 3DS games. There is one, the one like non-original Pokemon that gets a couple big shots is called Greninja, which is one, I can't remember which games he's from, but he's sort of from one
like
of
silver the, and gold
the
thing.
Third generation maybe, but is one that was sort of the hero Pokemon of that generation, was really, really popular.
Right.
Charizard gets a lot of airtime in the trailer.
Charizard
yeah,
gets a lot of
lots
again.
Of so stampeding Bulbasaurs I saw.
The Bulbasaurs, yeah. So all the stuff they're pushing is the stuff that we grew up with, the stuff that's going to hit the nostalgia buttons. Not necessarily the stuff, other than Pikachu, obviously, who's eternally popular, but it's not necessarily the stuff that seven-year-olds today will think of as their favourite Pokemon.
No.
Yeah. That's not what they're pushing. They're pushing the ones that are favourite Pokemon.
I'm not sure, actually. I know we're saying it's a kids' film, but if I show, a seven-year-old that trailer, not sure they would laugh or get it.
No, I think it's trying to hit both demos, isn't it? But it's when I say it's a kids' film, it's got what's his name Smith in it.
Justice Smith. Is he in Jurassic Park?
Yeah. Jurassic Park.
And it's. I mean, it's going to be a movie that you could show to a child. Basically, it's not going to be seven.
Is this kind of, is this going to be like the 21st century total reinvention of like a film? I always think like Toy Story. Like my dad took me to see that. Yeah. I thought it was funny because there's funny toys, but like it's actually got really good jokes in it.
Yeah.
It's just like that, like The Simpsons, like everything. Yeah. It's two different films for.
It's not going to be Pikachu screaming "What's in the box?"
Yeah.
it's not going to be gritty. Yeah. Detective. Yeah, there might be some sort of jokes about kind of film noir in there for the adults in the room, but it's
like a cast in it. What's the who's the old dying man in Inception? He's in it, right?
Ken Watanabe.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Was he in the trailer? In the trailer. He was also the dying man in Inception, but Ken Watanabe's
sure
in
is,
it,
isn't he?
Bill Nighy does the intro voiceover in that trailer, so it's safe to assume
there are two
the
dying
well.
Men in Inception, aren't there?
Okay, fine. The Asian man.
Yeah, the Asian.
Yeah, Ken Watanabe.
Cool.
Because the white dying man in Inception is now dead, isn't he?
Yeah. This is the last film, Pete Postlethwaite.
Pete Postlethwaite.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, that's
we're such nerds. I wonder how many people don't know what the hell we're talking about. Sorry,
the thing
listeners.
I did want to say about this trailer is just how hilariously jarring it was for me as someone that was coming at it with absolutely no prior knowledge. So I'd seen a few tweets where basically it was just Pikachu and his Deerstalker, and I was like, what is this? And then I watched the trailer, and then he just starts talking, and it's Ryan Reynolds' voice, and you're just like, this is completely throwing me off balance.
What's the what's the deal with the fact that not everyone can understand Pikachu?
Oh, I've not actually played the Detective Pikachu game, so I don't know what that is.
Because the lead in this film, if you haven't seen it, listener, he can understand Pikachu.
Yeah,
and
so
when other people
Pokemon,
talk to him, they just hear him going, Pika.
Yeah, a Pokemon can only ever say their own name, but then for some reason, the main character in this can actually hear him talk like
that
Ryan.
That would help hurry the story along a little bit.
Yeah. It's kind of terrible. Yeah, I mean, it was a big thing in the gaming world when they released this Detective Pikachu game and Pikachu could talk in it, because it was that same thing of this is so weird.
Right.
I assume
talking Pikachu.
They're going to yada yada the explanation.
Oh, yeah, there'll be something.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it'll be something to do with some sort of mystic gem.
I'm sure it will be a Mr. Jet. Or Mew might be involved. In
yeah, who knows? Some test tube thing.
Yeah.
Quite.
Anything else on the Pokemon?
No, he's a bit furrier than
actually, you were going to say that this is going to be the beginning of a Pokemon expanded universe.
Well, not necessarily Pokemon, but this is Nintendo.
It's already pretty fucking expanded.
This is Nintendo's big push into multimedia stuff, and they've been saying for a while in sort of investor calls over the last few years that they basically wanted to be better about making money off of all their intellectual property. They're very good at doing that in games, but they've not always made the most of it.
Go on.
Partly they got burned by the 80s Mario movie, which was...
Yeah, was that Bob Hoskins? God, that was bad.
Yes, and John Leguizamo.
Yeah. he has been
Dennis Hopper is the bad guy, King Koopa.
Nice.
It's a terrible film. I have a massive soft spot for it. It's got this amazing design that's kind of like... mushroomy Blade Runner. So I really think it's worth anyone watching, because the world is like, what if Blade Runner but fungus everywhere?
Right.
And I can't believe they made that, and that they made that for a Mario movie, and it's just worth seeing.
There is some kind of neon Blade Runner aesthetic in the Detective Pikachu trailer as well, because there's a scene where he's talking and he's like, can you people understand
down
him?
Down to Market Street.
And it's down like a Market Street, and then it actually reminded me of the scene in the new Blade Runner where he meets the prostitute, because it's kind of in like outdoor tables with all the neon in the background. So there's definitely an aesthetic there.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is obviously is a big film thing. They are making a Mario movie as well. That one's going to be fully CG.
I was going to say, yeah.
So that's being made by the studio who've made the Despicable Me and Minions movies.
Okay.
So that's coming in 2022, probably.
I'd imagine that would be less...
That would be more kid-focused, yeah, I think. More openly a kid's film. There's also really interesting stuff that came out the other week that they are in talks to make something to do with The Legend of Zelda,
mm-hmm.
probably for Netflix. It was Adi Shankar, who's the showrunner on the Castlevania anime that's on Netflix right now, which has had huge critical acclaim, and it's really, really, really good. As somebody who hasn't even played the Castlevania games, I think it's actually like fantastic. It's just this weird, violent, gothic Western anime.
I've played a bit of Castlevania. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it's great. It's the second season dropped last month, I think.
So much stuff buried on Netflix, isn't there?
Yeah, if you don't.
Yeah, my algorithm sucks.
If the algorithm hasn't picked out that you might like that thing, you're never going
to
see it.
It's a shite comedy. Yeah. I need to go digging.
But yeah, so he's in talks to make... Basically, he's caught the gaming industry's attention after that, or he's pursuing them. I don't know which way around it goes. But after that doing very well, he's been in talks for something to do with Assassin's Creed animated after they did the rubbish live-action movie. But he's also in talks to do something Zelda, which sounds like it would probably be more of a TV show.
Wow, big.
So that's another big thing that's going to come. Then there was stuff that's been, for years there's been speculation that Metroid might get a movie, and then Brie Larson wore a Metroid costume for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Which sort of stoked that again, and now everyone's saying, oh, they could do it, and she could do it.
Apart from the Mario film, I'm trying to think of other video game films. Not that many. Tomb Raider's pretty bad.
Been loads. I mean, we've had three Tomb Raider
films. Watch them.
Doom was alright.
Yeah, Doom the Rock thing.
Resident Evil Doom. Actually is a
long running franchise.
Yeah,
like five of them, six of them.
I forget those. Yeah, Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, we got a live action.
No, Beckinsale. No, she's Underworld.
Jovovich.
Yeah, thingy from Fifth Element.
That's her.
Yeah. Like I said, there was a live action Assassin's Creed with Michael Fassbender.
That looked terrible.
The other year, that got very bad reviews.
The terrible Mario movie is just the absolute best, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's the peak. But there have been rubbish video game movies being made for years. We've had like two Hitman movies.
Mortal Kombat movie is a classic.
Mortal Kombat's way back when. Street Fighter's been done both years ago and more recently. They people keep trying.
GoldenEye, of course.
Failing.
Of course.
That's a joke.
Yeah, okay.
Cool.
So this is one of the things where, yeah, the small screens had a bit more like with Castlevania, but there still hasn't really been a great video game adaptation. There have been some okay ones, but they're mostly pretty bad.
It just shows this voracious hunger for content and IP-based content at the moment from the studios. Like, you saw this week that AMC have announced that they're going to completely expand the Walking Dead universe, and there's going to be like four Rick Grimes movies, and there's going to be a game, and there's this gaping void for content at the moment from all the streaming services, especially as Disney comes online and all the other ones come online. So you're going to just see every single piece of IP like this just bled for as much value as possible.
Well, from Pokemon and one beloved franchise to another well-regarded video game, Tetris.
Less fluffy characters.
Yeah, more angles.
Better music.
What is Tetris in the news for this week?
So there's a new game out on PlayStation 4 called The Tetris Effect, which is really... Tetris has been re-released every now and then. So every few years, some new version comes out, has done since the original. And it's normally not very exciting to anyone except diehard Tetris fans. And The Tetris Effect has been a bit of a surprise because it's suddenly in everyone's Game of the Year lists and in contention for sort of prizes it's been getting 5-star reviews across the board.
Okay, so wait. So it's Tetris, but on a home console.
So it's Tetris on the PlayStation 4, so it's on a home console. It's also compatible with PlayStation VR.
Right.
Which is definitely the better way to play it if you've got that. What it is it's from the devs who brought Rez Infinite to VR a while ago, which is a sort of rhythm puzzle game.
Okay.
And this is kind of moving Tetris into the same space where it's basically incorporating the music into the game and incorporating visual effects into it as well. So it's named after this sort of state that people get in after you've been playing Tetris for such a long time that you start to see the tetrominoes around you.
Is that,
of, you
is
know,
that the correct
sort of
term?
See things starting in. Yeah, tetrimino.
I did not know that.
I may not be pronouncing it right. I'm not sure. But
tetramino.
Tetramino, I'm not sure. Yeah. But yeah, so this is a game that's basically being created from the ground up to create this immersive, consuming state of mind where basically you sort of play through and every stage has different music and different visual effects going on. So say in one you're going and there's all these sort of dolphins made of beads of light swimming around you while these like water, all the Tetris blocks on this one are watery. There's this like flowing music. And every time you move a block or rotate a block or slot a block or clear a line, it makes a noise which fits in with the song. Right. So it's this weird kind of rhythm game space where by playing Tetris, you are contributing to the song, to the whole audiovisual experience that's all reactive to what you're doing. And it just makes it so much more...
Okay, I see. Yeah.
All your senses get tied into the actual actions you're making.
Okay.
And especially in VR, it's very, very overwhelming.
Cool. There's nothing really like that. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, it's very unusual.
I had
and
Donkey Konga on the GameCube.
Great game.
Do you remember
I
that with the actual bongo controllers?
Yeah. I've still got my bongos sitting around somewhere.
I think I have too. Oh man, we should bring them in. But no, this sounds like way... This is like a completely different genre.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And it's taken me by surprise because, you know, I mean, I like Tetris as much as anyone in that kind of... You know, I had it on the Game Boy and I remember losing hours to it, but I would never go and buy Tetris again for modern... You know, I've not been in a rush to play and I could just get on my phone if I wanted to. I've never bothered. But this feels like something different. It feels like something very special, especially in VR. I'm still working my way through the sort of main single-player mode, but what's really fascinated to me is that quite a lot of the reviews talk about one of the final stages being very moving. I've read people talking about crying while playing this Tetris game because it was such an emotional experience. And that is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You need to keep playing and you can come back on the pod when you've shed a tear.
Weeping uncontrollably.
Well, thanks for that.
I feel like once someone tells me that something's going to be hugely moving, it's not going to move me. Because I kind of steel myself to it.
Yeah.
It happens in a lot of movies where someone will be like, the ending's going to knock you for six, and then I kind of steel myself to it.
Friend recommended a book to me because he said it made him cry. And I read it, and it was really depressing, but I was just waiting to cry, so it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm hard as nuts.
Maybe.
Do I mean nails?
I think you mean nails.
Well, on that bombshell... Let's have some drums and synths and then come back and talk about something mildly serious.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Scott, another app, another fuck up.
Yeah.
What's this one?
Yeah, this is such a less fun topic to talk about for everyone involved.
But it's quite important.
So Facebook, again, in the news, again. It's one of those stories that the New York Times have published, which they've been getting in the habit of doing for the last kind of 2 years, which kind of makes you just kind of stop what you're doing and read it.
This is a long old expose.
Yeah, long old expose, basically focusing in on how Facebook has responded to its multiple public relations issues and scandals over the last 2 years. So that encompasses fake news, Russian bots, Cambridge Analytica scandal, all of these things that have been reported already. But what this New York Times piece does is it delves into how Facebook internally has kind of responded to those crises.
Oh, internally rather than publicly in statements and stuff.
Yeah, and the key takeaway basically is that Facebook has embarked on what you would traditionally call a dirty tricks campaign, right, which is where you employ public relations, lobbying professionals to basically smear your opponents to make you not look so bad. It involves a huge amount of public relations work and lobbying to make sure that Congress don't come down on you so hard when, you know, you've been breaking data privacy regulations. And I was saying to you earlier, Henry, the problem with this story is that because I cover Facebook, or because I am I basically read so much about Facebook, I wasn't really shocked by these,
no,
by the piece. Mm. A lot of people were saying, you know, it was jaw-dropping kind of revelations. I wasn't that surprised that this is how they kind of go about their business. No. This is very typical corporate behavior. When the shit hits the fan, this is how corporations tend to respond. The problem is, this is how corporations in oil and gas and financial services tend to respond. This is not how liberal-leaning Silicon Valley companies that talk about connecting the world and making the world a better place, it's generally not the way that they respond to crises.
It's what the baddies do. We're all used it to is. The baddies doing it, and it's sort of now this, oh wait, are Facebook the baddies?
This is what Goldman Sachs would do, yeah, or this is what BP would do.
For me, there were two the two things that stood out, and I know there's lots of angles to this, but this is just what I saw. Since this article has been published, there have been one quite serious claim that Zuckerberg's had to respond to publicly, and then another, I thought, sort of more sort of trivial one that I just found quite funny.
Was it the phones one?
Yeah. So the trivial thing is that the piece claims that the reason Zuckerberg told everyone at Facebook that they have to use an Android phone and they can't use an iPhone is after the data breach scandals, and Tim Cook was interviewed on MSNBC, I think.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, this would never happen at Apple because, you know, privacy is really important to us and it's your civil liberty and we protect that.
It's because Tim Cook was mean to him.
Yeah, basically, yeah. which is funny that it's the other way around, because side note, Steve Jobs was so angry at a Microsoft employee saying that their products were better than his that he actually canned the iPad, which was meant to come before the iPhone, and they changed it into the iPhone first.
Yeah. Anyway, did Zuckerberg originally sell that in as like a security thing?
Yeah, he also said that because Facebook is a global product, and that iOS is only actually the majority used in the West, that they should be using Android phones because actually the majority of the 2 billion people who use Facebook are doing it on Android phones.
It really is, because Tim Cook said mean things
about
him.
So that was funny, because he's actually come out and said that. And then the other thing, which is slightly more important, is that another one of these third-party apps, I've actually forgotten the name of it, that the piece says basically that Zuckerberg didn't know about it, and then they've sort of cut ties with them now. But his PR response to this, this lobbying group that we just sort of didn't know about, his response was, yeah, I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
That was it. There was not even, I didn't know about it, and these are the reasons why, or this is what we've now done. He was just like basically qualifying that this all happened because he didn't know.
Yeah, so I've kind of buried the lead here, because that really is the crux of what this piece gets at. The crux of this piece is that Sheryl Sandberg is the one pulling the strings here.
And her title at the company
is... She's the chief operating officer. She's an ex-Googler. She also worked for the Treasury Secretary at one point. She's a massive Democrat donor, and she, I think she worked on the Hillary Clinton campaign.
She did.
She basically, she very much is a Washington and a Silicon Valley insider, which puts her in a very unique position to be, you know, kind of at the forefront of all of these things that I just talked about in terms of lobbying, in terms of dealing with Congress, in terms of dealing with public relations. What it showed was that Sheryl Sandberg, for all of her kind of public persona as a very liberal-leaning executive, a very powerful executive, someone that tends to empower women in executive roles. She wrote a very popular book called Lean In. She also had a horrendous tragedy last year when her husband suddenly died, and wrote a book about that as well. So she's always been this kind of very well-revered figure in Silicon Valley, but what this piece really shows is there's another side to Sheryl Sandberg, and it is she is cutthroat.
Yeah,
she it's that very much attack or be attacked mentality, and she did not mess around when Facebook came under attack over the last 2 years, and basically used every political power and ploy and connection that she could possibly use to try and protect her company.
Mm. Did it work?
Probably it worked until now. I mean, it didn't really work. I mean, the company has just been dealing with shitstorm after shitstorm for the last 2 years, and their public, they're basically the way they're thought of in public, and their trust is falling through the floor.
I agree with you, but they thought of in public in certain sectors.
Yeah, but also your point stands. Their stock price hasn't moved.
No,
their stock price hasn't moved a jot. It might have dropped. It's dropped over the last 2 years, but it's still maintained a huge amount of its value. I mean, basically, the top line is Wall Street doesn't give a shit about any of this, and which makes sense because Wall Street.
No one's going to walk away from that big an advertising monster, is
it? No, and Wall Street would have liked BP, and it would like Goldman Sachs, regardless of the way they went about their business, because they were still behemoths, and that's what Facebook is now.
Yeah.
The difficulty people are having is separating the set up in his Harvard dorm room attitude towards Facebook and what it is now, which is a global corporation.
Well, it's funny that you said that because his thing in front of Congress when he had to answer to a lot of the Cambridge Analytica stuff, it really annoyed me that he so often brought up the fact that he was like, I started this in my dorm room.
Yeah.
But apparently, as the piece says, and as we probably could have guessed, poor old robot Mark. But yeah, he was properly drilled before that to basically avoid all the questions in a kind of eloquent way.
Yeah.
And he did. And supposedly, yeah, he told one of the guys, I've forgotten the name of the guy that he said it to during the hearing, but he was apparently personally surprised at the level and sort of the intensity of the questioning.
Yeah.
Which the piece sort of suggests that, like, even then, in that bigger pile of shit, he's still not aware of how powerful Facebook is.
Yeah.
I mean, Sandberg would have been way better at facing Congress, but they obviously asked for the CEO. I mean, Sandberg would have done a far better job.
Yeah.
She's much more polished. She's much better at that kind of thing. Zuckerberg has no political instincts whatsoever.
Well, she turned up to the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing, right?
She did the one where Larry Page didn't turn up.
Which is great PR for them.
Great for them, because all of the flack ended up being on Google, not Facebook.
Jack Dorsey turned up with his weird upturned collar.
He did.
And Sam
Well, he had no collar. It was one of those weird, like, monk collars.
He'd also flipped it up. What? And he had, like, a pirate earring. It was fucking weird.
He is a weird dude.
There's
a couple of other little things that the piece kind of, it's worth reading anyway, but it kind of throws up a few other interesting things. Basically, in 2015, when Trump was still presidential candidate, Facebook very much strongly considered whether he had violated their terms and whether his account should be suspended.
Is that to do when he suggested his policy would be to ban Muslims?
It was a Muslim ban comments. And basically the Times revealed that the conversation that went on with the general counsel at Facebook and everyone involved at the time basically was like, don't poke the bear, was the exact quote. Basically, don't poke the bear of Republican supporters because the backlash will be too strong, so let's just leave it.
Right.
We kind of knew that, but it's interesting to see it on paper. And also, it's not difficult to extrapolate that onto other social media companies and wonder whether that's the policy they've taken as well.
Well, yeah, it's in line with the whole narrative that Twitter still considers itself like an open platform and it doesn't have any political responsibility, which is why it doesn't ban
Even when Donald Trump threatens nuclear war on the platform.
Yeah, doesn't ban Nazis. And then, that piece also points out that could be wrong, but I think it was in a Recode interview where Kara Swisher poked Zuckerberg enough for him to actually admit that he didn't think that Holocaust deniers should be banned from Facebook. Because they sort of, it's like, it's a don't poke the bear thing, but then also politically, if they do it once, they're going to be held to account for everything. They don't want
to
get involved.
They have to stop taking positions on all sorts of topics. Once they take a position on one, you're committed to. If you did it then, why don't you do it now? So they've got to start deciding actually what the Facebook line is.
He really still thinks that it's a media company when it is a publisher.
Yeah, and as you
and they have a responsibility to do that.
Yeah,
and they just don't.
No. And as you brought up the Holocaust denier thing, that's also another angle on this piece, is that there's a lot of kind of Israel lobby activities going on around this. So the company that Facebook hired to do a lot of its public affairs was a company called Definers.
That's the one I was trying to think
and
of.
And Definers was set up by a bunch of Republican veterans who deploy very Republican political kind of strategies onto corporate affairs. That's things like research-based PR, things like smearing rivals, but also they their efforts did include depicting George Soros as the force behind the anti-Facebook kind of movement, which is just a classic Republican move, is to blame everything on Soros. And when you've got, you know, Sandberg and Zuckerberg, who are both Jewish executives, it just kind of leaves a bit of a bitter taste in the mouth.
Yeah. Still haven't deleted my Facebook, though.
Me neither. Me neither.
Don't know why I haven't.
No, me neither.
I don't want anyone to really see all those photos I'm tagged in. So no. Why wouldn't I delete it?
I don't really use it for anything anymore. It's just there.
The only thing I ever use it for is if somebody like invites you to a party, but they don't actually text you. They just add you on Facebook.
Yeah.
Not that I get invited to that many parties, by the way. But
no.
Yeah, I don't really need it. I do use Messenger, though. Can you deactivate your Facebook account and still use Messenger?
I don't know, because I hate Messenger.
I don't think so.
I'm just I use Messenger more bubbly now. But not the actual main app.
Well.
So the last thing is we'll just have to wait and see what happens here. My suspicion is nothing. I think Sandberg will keep her job. I think Zuckerberg will keep his job. I think their stock price will stay fairly level. I think we'll probably see some more stuff come out. But all in all, it's not actually going to have an impact.
A couple of people didn't keep their jobs, did they?
No, so I mean, Stamos left. I think Alex Stamos was the head of security.
Was that largely down to the fact they investigated it without really telling anyone?
Yeah, it's worth reading the piece for that, actually, because it's really interesting how kind of Stamos went about kind of investigating the Russian bots and then kind of realized how bad it was and then kind of bided his time until he told executives, because he knew they really wouldn't want to hear what he had to tell them. And then when he did tell them that the problem was worse than they expected, he got screamed at by Sheryl Sandberg in front of everyone, apparently, where she said that he threw them under the bus. And it's like, well, do you want me to not tell you, or do you want me to tell you?
Was the problem that he hadn't brought it up sooner?
Well, I think the general counsel said he should have brought it up sooner, but I don't know. I don't know what she wanted really from him. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I don't think they should worry about it now because they got Nick Clegg.
It's true. I forgot that.
He'll ball in the new year into Silicon Valley.
He'll sort it out.
With his yellow ties and his sort of wispy aura.
He's part of this, though. He's part of the lobbying and the PR machine at Facebook. And he's the European arm of that. And he's part of the dark arts side of things. So.
Fun times.
Cool.
Well, thank you both.
Cheers.
The light and the dark of tech this week. We'll come back next week.
Go and play a nice Tetris game with like dolphins and it'll come.
Don't look at the news at the weekend because this country is falling to shit. So let's just put our VR headsets on and like play Tetris with some whales.
And play the new Pokemon game, which is out today.
Yeah, let's go Pikachu. He's having a great run.
Pikachu's having a good run.
Not Ryan Reynolds Pikachu, though. It's just a new Switch game, is it?
Yeah, just a new Switch game. It's basically a loose remake of the original Red and Blue, but with some Pokemon Go-esque mechanics thrown in to make it more accessible and stuff like that.
The franchise rolls on.
Yep.
Thanks both. This franchise will hopefully roll on next week.
If the country's still here.
We'll satellite phone it in if not. Yep. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.